Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everybody, welcome to a brand new episode of Good Game, Nice Try. You look really nice today. I love that shirt. It like matches your eyes, you know?
Black?
I'm talking to our listeners.
I was like, excuse me, we're both wearing plain black t-shirts.
Yeah, and by the way, my t-shirt does match the blackness of my eyes, the soulless howling void in my eyes, don't you
think?
Not
far off, I guess. But.
Thank you. But no, I think our listeners look great today. What do you think, Sonia Reed, my co-host?
Well, Aaron Blairt, my co-host as well. I think that they look fantastic, and I'm so happy. So happy they're here.
I'm happy too. And listen, I think we were talking about something right before we started this podcast. And we were talking about playing games and taking breaks. And I was just saying, like, a lot of times during a game, I will time my bathroom breaks to the cutscenes. Like, I'll run. It'll be like, you hear that music? Dun, 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 or whatever. And then I'm like, all right. And I'll throw down the controller and go to the bathroom and run back. What's the longest you have played a single video game, a session? What's the longest you've gone?
Wow. Oh, geez.
Because I've had some long video gaming sessions, for sure.
Oh, God. It had to have been... The first thing I think of is getting back into WoW.
Yeah, WoW is...
It's a pit. It's honestly a time pit. I was playing a lot in like late high school, college, and then I kept quitting and coming back. It's been a really toxic relationship.
College or this game?
Both.
I kept quitting. I kept dropping out of college.
Both. And then, yeah, every time an expansion would come out, I'm like, well, cracks open wallet. I guess it's time again. And then it would be like 10 to 13 hour days. And then it would be every day or every other day for a bit, for a chunk. And then I want nothing to do with it until the next expansion.
Yeah, I feel I've had those experiences as well, where it's just like you eat all the cake you can and then the smell of cake makes you just want to vomit.
And then I feel like that kid in Matilda where he's just like jam packed chocolate cake everywhere. What about you? What'd you put the most time into?
You know, weirdly, I'm going to say like Guitar Hero.
Hmm.
I think weirdly, when that came out, I played it nonstop.
Which one? The first? Second?
The very first, like my very first, because that was mind-blowing to me. Like I've always played in bands my whole life and been a really crappy musician my entire life and jammed with friends and stuff. And so when that came out, that was a revelation. That was like, you know, the first time, like I would say a similar revelation to the first time I played Grand Theft Auto, GTA, where I was like that was my first open world game, you know? And I was like, what is happening? Oh my God, this is wild. Like, and I just played that and played that and played it. And GTA would be another one. Fallout, Skyrim, I've put hundreds of hours into those games, but I don't know that I've played them like day and night.
Like a consecutive session, like a, you know.
There's always a moment in those games where I just kind of get really annoyed with a small thing. And then I'm like, fuck it. And I just stop.
After you know, like 14 hours, you're like, okay.
Yeah. Like, and you know what it usually is? It's like the inventory. Like, cause I like one of those hoarders where I just carry like a billion things. And there will always come a point in that game around like hour 8 or 9 where I want to carry this tin can and I really want it and I don't have any space, but I can't drop this other stuff. I'm like, okay, I'm done. That's it. You're done. You're done. I'll just,
that's it. I'll figure it out. Whatever.
But Guitar Hero, they're all different songs. Mm-hmm. And so it was like this thing of like every song is like a new, cool, rhythmic thing. And it just kept hooking me in and hooking me in and hooking me in. Those games for me, like Guitar Hero, I think I specifically, just like, whoa, vicious. But now it's weird because I think now whenever I play Guitar Hero, Rock Band ruined it.
What? Why?
Because now I just am playing it by myself. I just feel so alone.
And did you ever try like the drums or the singing or anything in Rock Band, or were you just straight guitar?
I did it all, dude. I'm a pro. I'm a pro. What about you?
Oh.
I'm a pro.
I tried the drums. It's embarrassing. Before the podcast even started today, you broke out a ukulele that was too small for you.
And you broke out a guitar that was too big for you.
Yes. And then we've established we're starting a band, and Jen is going to be on drums.
That's right. Jen Samples, our producer, is going to wail on the skins.
Mm-hmm.
What's your drumming style, Jen? What's your drumming style in Rock Band and then also in real life?
Well, I started playing the drums because have you guys ever seen that Tom Hanks movie, That Thing You Do?
Oh, of course.
So that's why I started playing drums. I wanted to be like the cool drummer with the sunglasses.
Yes.
And so that was my like alter ego, was like wanted to be like the cool drummer person.
Whoa.
Did you have a name?
Well, in the movie, his was Shades.
Whoa.
I would say yours could be like, because you skateboard. Yours could be like Coast or like.
Ooh, I like that. I like that. Okay. Know?
I also think, and Sonia, back me up on this, I think it's hilarious that you're like, I really want to be a cool drummer, because you are literally the coolest person I know. You, like...
That's ridiculous.
You were, like, going off this trail that had... There was no railing and, like, a I don't know how many foot drop, and you skateboard.
You're the real-life Lara Croft. You literally are.
Oh, my gosh. That's my dream.
You're living it!
You're living it!
It's it!
Coast. I go by Coast now.
My God. Well, speaking of cool people, I'm super excited about our guest today. She's one of the coolest.
Yes. Ugh. I'm so excited that we had a chance to talk to her. She's incredible, multi-talented. She's fantastic. An actress, writer, producer, host, gamer. She does everything.
And does it well.
And does it very well. I admire her on so many levels, especially for being such a pioneer for women in the gaming industry. And she's worked with outlets like CBS, Disney, IGN. She's such a badass. We had so much fun talking to her. Here's our interview with Naomi Kyle.
How did you guys first meet?
I feel like two things. One, the Canadians find each other.
That is so true.
That's yes. True.
That is a fact. That just happens here in the States. No, why?
Right. I think it's a combination of just knowing each other from, you know, being in the industry and just social media. And then eventually, I mean, I feel like I've seen you at every single convention.
Me too. So. Yeah. Yeah. I think it was some form of that.
Being such a pioneer in the industry and especially a role model for other women in the gaming space, do you feel that pressure a bit?
Oh, yeah. I do. I feel like I'm always making sure if I'm messaging, especially in these times where a lot of things are being talked about that are very difficult to talk about. And not only, you know, just in person, but online publicly. So I feel like I have to do right by my community. There are a lot of people that look up to me. So I want to make sure if I'm saying something, it's exactly what I mean. And I'm not just like throwing out a tweet without having second thoughts or thinking through what I'm saying. So yeah, I'd say there is a lot of pressure. And I think that comes with anyone who's in the public eye or has an audience of any kind.
I mean, I feel like you do, being an incredible role model that you are, I feel like you do a really good job of that, just being so naturally authentic, you know?
You and I have had discussions about that, like just kind of what to do on social media, how to be, you know, there's so many different, you can come from so many different angles, but, you know, I've definitely, after leaving IGN, after being on my own, so to speak, I've struggled trying to find what that voice is. You know, it's definitely changed because now I don't have the backing of a full corporation. I'm not like, kind of stick to their messaging. Now I have to find my own thing. So with, you know, we've talked about it together where it's like, what are the things you want to speak to? what are you passionate about? What are you putting out there in the world? How what are you contributing to the conversation? So it's stuff I've definitely had more time to think about these days. And I appreciate you saying that I come off authentically, because that's really all I want to do. Mm-hmm. And I'm just trying to stick as much as possible to like what's truly coming from my core, my soul, or whatever you
want. Yeah. It's a really interesting thing, like kind of leaving IGN and finding your own voice, I think is something that feels like a really interesting, but also, you know, like you're saying, a very difficult process. Like, what has that road been like? And what are some signposts along that road that you found yourself like, oh, wait a second, I really do like this, you know, like, you know. Mm-hmm.
The difficult thing with having been at a place like IGN is like, everyone's telling you what's good, what's not good, you know, because that's what we do. We're like, right, we review video games. So, it's a good thing and it's a bad thing, you know? So I feel like now I'm my journey has been these past two, almost 3 years, I've taken a lot of time to just like sit at my desk and be like, what do I actually want to play right now? Or what do I actually feel like talking about or consuming? Or because I'm not on a schedule, I'm not being told play this game at 3 o'clock this time. So I've been exploring what that is. Like recently I just picked up Mario Odyssey and Luigi's Mansion 3. I just like played those two games like in an entire weekend and I completed them.
A weekend well spent.
Yeah, totally. And I didn't even think about like posting about it. I was just like, you know, I'm just enjoying this for the fact that it's something I'm really enjoying. Like I'm not going to share this with anybody. I just want to live vicariously through this game and be in it, you know, be in that moment. So
yes.
So it's been a lot of that, I'd say, these past 2 years. And then when it comes to, you know, social media, that's still a thing I'm kind of tailoring or figuring out where I land on that front.
Could you bring us back to like the beginning and starting out in a male dominated mm-hmm. industry, I guess, because even like growing up playing games, I mean, obviously Lara Croft and bigger ones, but even kind of overlaying with the gaming industry as a whole, you know, starting out in streaming and starting out in content creation, there wasn't a lot of female representation. You know, at the beginning, even, you know, when I was first starting in the top followed, you know, 100 streamers, maybe a handful were female. So I feel like we've come a long way, but I feel like we still have, you know, some ways to go.
Yeah, I definitely experienced the, what would you call it? You know, the dude culture, the bro culture, or the boys club culture. Like that was IGN in a nutshell when I first arrived there. So I had to, you know, talking with some of my ex-coworkers who were females in that space, there was a lot of kind of unfairness. We were not seen as equals. And that, you know, it's a culture problem. And I think that was the beginning. Like that was the start of, you know, I was one of maybe two other females in our department, you know, like video, editorial, like that's the people that created the content for IGN. There was like maybe myself and two other girls. So that was a huge sign, you know, right from the get-go, this is a boys club. And I come from that environment from even before IGN, like when I worked at Steve's Music Store. It's a music store, a lot of guys with long hair playing guitars, you know?
Aaron, were you hanging out there?
Was that you?
pulls off, this is a wig, just my long flowing locks come down.
You're a regular, I recall. no, it's, having come from that, you know, I was pretty used to it. And I feel like having been through IGN at one of their like huge changes that I saw throughout my time there, I was there 7 years. So I was there a long time. I saw them, you know, having a conversation about wanting to have more diversity in their voices, like actively seeking out people that weren't their usual didn't fit the, you know, the box that they had created, and it trying to go outside of that. And so finally they, you know, over time, even going back now, I'm like, I don't recognize a lot of the people, but they're all such a diverse bunch of people and they're all so good at what they do. And that just speaks to, again, companies listening and finally like taking active steps. You know, there's a lot of talk of like, we should do this, we should do that. But like, who's actually doing and taking those steps? And I saw it over a period of 7 years. So I feel like already in 7 years, there was a huge there was a huge progress that I saw from within the company I worked for and within the industry. And then I can see that, you know, happening even further now, just in a short amount of time. And just the fact that we're so actively speaking out about these things and wanting to see change.
Again, through everything and through any sort of struggles and everything that you've went through in your journey, you've really solidified yourself as aww, this strong, badass female. And yeah, I really admire you for, you know, everything that you've accomplished.
Aw, thank you.
Among those things, I knew that you, speaking of badass females, mm-hmm, I know that you've done some cosplay.
I have. Actually, quite a bit.
That's what I'm saying. I didn't know how much.
I didn't either. Yeah, I was looking back at photos and I was like, I actually did a lot more than I thought. You know, I'm like, I don't consider myself a cosplayer, but I definitely have done some really badass ones. Yeah, and didn't realize how much there was. And they were all characters that I love. So it turned out
you've
great.
Done so many. I mean, I knew about, I saw your Horizon Zero Dawn, yes, your Alloy one. I took huge inspiration
so from
that. It was incredible. But like, Laura Croft, you've done Mercy from Overwatch, mm-hmm, Usagi, you've done Aloy, Lilu, Black Cat, Harley, like you're all over the place. That's incredible.
Yeah, it's a shock to me too. I didn't realize that over the years, you don't notice, you know, like I did like maybe one or two or like two or three. And I'm like, that's people who cosplay, that's their like every day or almost, you know, 6 times, 10 times, maybe more a year they're doing a cosplay. So for me, it didn't seem like a lot, but then over the years, it definitely added up.
What was your first and what was going through your mind the first time you did it? I'm always so curious about like, because I love dressing up. I mean, I have like a whole bin of wigs. Like I am
You need to cosplay.
Well, that's what this is exactly. No, this is why I'm asking. I'm taking the long way around the house. But
right,
like your first cosplay, like, A, what was it? And B, like, what was the impetus behind it? Like, was it a convention? Were you like, oh, I want to do this? Mm. Or is it a game that you love?
Also, Aaron, if you want to just ask us to do like a group Sailor Moon cosplay,
totally
I'd just say
down.
It.
100%. I have most of the stuff probably.
Amazing. You're already set. I'm in too. I did Sailor Moon actually. So I have the
cosplay. But I don't want to shave my beard though. Can I be like Sailor Moon with a beard?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
100%. That's what it is about cosplay. You know, you can kind of make it your own. So I think my first one that I did, oh my gosh. I think I did it for Halloween. It was the Lara Croft Tomb Raider, the brand new Tomb Raider reboot that had come out that year.
Nice.
Yeah. And so what I did was I commissioned it from somebody who I worked with in Montreal. So I used to model way back in the day. And she was somebody who did like these really funky, like almost all used secondhand items as well to do costumes. And we stayed friends. And she was like, yeah, I'll totally do this for you. So she shipped it to me in a box. She like put fake blood and like dirtied up the
and
everything.
Oh, nice. Oh, that's great.
And so I'd say
that's Lara like halfway through the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like she's been in
that. Yeah, exactly. So that's my first. Yeah, she's been through the ringer. So that's my first one that I did. And I guess the feeling I got, and I get this every now and then, it'll kind of come back when I do cosplay, but you just embody that character. You really feel not yourself and like you can be somebody else and you have like this permission granted to just take it all the way, you know?
If you could see Blade doing any cosplay,
oh,
what would you imagine his forte would be?
This is going to keep me up tonight. Yeah. All right, let's go.
What immediately came to mind was Sully from Uncharted.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll take it. Sully's great.
Yeah.
Not Nathan Drake, obviously.
You could still pull that off. I mean,
okay,
the whole
maybe like an old, what about like an old Nathan Drake?
Yeah.
Because I have like white hair.
Like how Joel has evolved since The Last of Us 2. He's a little bit more. Yeah. So you should do
there you
that.
Go.
Yeah.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. With over 350 million global monthly visitors, Indeed's matching engine helps you find quality candidates fast. You get to ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. It's not just about hiring faster, though. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Don't search. Match with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You know, it's interesting. You went to college, is this correct, to become a jazz singer?
I did, yeah.
That's awesome. I mean, how does music, do you think, impact a game? And are there any games that you could point to that you're like, oh, the score is amazing. This music is amazing.
100%. I mean, I always say the classic Splinter Cell Chaos Theory Amon Tobin soundtrack is killer. Wow.
Yes.
And it's so out there, and it tried something so different at a time where like music was kind of meh and it was all pop, you know, groups and stuff. So I felt like they really did a good job in trying to modernize music in games.
Okay.
Yeah. So I feel like that's always stuck with me. Like I always go back to that soundtrack. And then a lot of other games like GTA 5 or, you know, and of course you've got to give props to World of Warcraft soundtrack. You know,
oh, yeah.
That is it's almost like our Star Wars soundtrack. Like it's in the gaming world, you know, like I feel like it falls under that. Just such an iconic orchestral, like beautiful music. And there's other games like every game. I think music is so important. Like you can have a video game experience. It's very rare to have a video game experience with no music.
Very true.
Yeah, like there's some worlds that are really good with ambiance, you know, like the humming of the space engine or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I think there's just something to say about like without music, games would not be as immersive and as engaging. Like it's the same thing with movies, you know, you can't have, or TV shows.
100% agreed. And like, I mean, even to the point where, you know, playing The Last of Us, like that bow being drawn across the violin, I hear that and I just immediately start sweating.
Yeah. Another good game that actually, innovated music for games is like, you know, that acoustic guitar and like really bringing you to that Southern world, like, well, for the first one. And then the second one was like, they kind of changed a little bit and added different sounds and different instruments. And I think every game has to have their own like music theme of some kind.
And it's interesting you mentioned that too, because I just now, as you're saying the acoustic guitar, it feels to me like they almost used acoustic instruments because like there's no electricity in the post-apocalypse.
Huh.
And because, you know, like, in the beginning of The Last of Us 2, Joel finds this acoustic guitar and, you know, and Ellie's playing that
very
stuff,
intentional decisions, very cool. Huh?
Yeah.
It's an art.
It gives you, like, think about for a second. Let's all think about the sound of a coin brick being hit in Mario.
Yeah.
How good does that make you feel?
It's
so good. And then you could even say that about Zelda when you open the chest.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's the best. Yeah.
There we go.
Just classic. Classic sounds.
Classic. Spotify, put some Mario coin sounds on Spotify so I can feel good about myself.
Put that on repeat. All of the little, you know, dings from Zelda or dings from Mario.
Yeah.
I just want to get that serotonin rush all the time. Just put it on repeat.
Just put it as your text message phone sound.
There we go.
Yeah. Perfect. All right. Well, Naomi, listen, in this podcast, we love to talk about best games and worst games.
Yeah.
All right. So, and not about streaming, but just period.
Okay, so most hated game. So you guys asked me this. It's very hard to choose, first of all, because I had the advantage of being in a place where I knew before a game even came out if it was good or bad. So I mostly just avoided the bad games, right?
You know what? I didn't think about
interesting
that.
Interesting perspective. Huh?
Yeah. So, and I also, when I was younger, I just played any game. Like I didn't have such, what would you say, like intellectual perspective of about like whether a game was good or bad. I just wanted to play any game. And so I actually played a lot of really bad games growing up that I found out later were really bad, but I love them so much because of that nostalgic.
Aww.
See, I say then those games aren't bad.
Right. Yeah. So that's why it was also very difficult for me to choose, because I kind of enjoy when games are bad. I like making fun of them, you know, and sometimes they are bad for one thing, but they're good for another.
Sure.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's all personal opinion, you know?
Yeah. Some of my favorite horror movies are the worst horror movies of all time.
Right. Yes. Exactly. So I feel like I also had to figure out, okay, well, what's a game that I actually gave a fair shot at and ended up coming away with it with like no feelings or something. Mm. So I finally landed on Star Wars Battlefront 2. Which I know is
okay.
I'm putting it out there. Did you love it, Aaron?
No, I love this choice though, because I hated it. Okay. Now, for people who don't know, explain. There was a lot of controversy about this game.
Well, right. Besides the loot boxes and all that. Like, right, I know that was the big controversy, but it wasn't the reason I hated it.
When it came out, there was a lot of controversy around it because EA was, it just felt like they were trying to make money. And everyone really loved, you know, Star Wars, you get to play, it's a multiplayer game, you get to play in the Star Wars universe, mm-hmm. and you can be a hero, you could be Luke, you can be Boba Fett, you can be all these people. So when the second one came out and it just felt like they were just squeezing the fans for money, mm-hmm. there was a huge outcry.
Yeah, it's always on those lists of like worst games of all time kind of thing.
Yeah.
But the reason I didn't like it was because for me, like it was similar to, okay, I started out playing, my first Star Wars game was we're going back here, but
I love how this is a very like weighted decision. Like you've really
because it was, put I this didn't through. Have, I was like, what game do I really don't like? You know, it was really hard to figure out. So the first Star Wars game that I played when I was younger, it was Phantom Menace, Star Wars Phantom Menace. Also a terrible game, according to people, but I had such nostalgia playing that game. I loved it because it was like my first Star Wars, you know, big hoopla, like the movie to come out. Yeah. And I was going through, you know, playing a little Anakin and then, Queen Amidala. So I felt like that game just took, like it did it for me. So then Star Wars Battlefront 2 came out. This was like many years later. and I was like, okay, first of all, these characters are all from the older movies. Okay. Second, I really didn't care for the flying around and like taking down the AATSTs. And I did give it a fair shot. I had it on my desk for years, and every now and then I would hop back in and play a little bit. And I was like, this is just boring. Like there's no, like it doesn't get you into the story that quickly. It just, there was just so much, like just what it did so different from the past Star Wars game that I played, Phantom Menace, which again, not a great game, but I loved it. I wanted that experience again. And I just was not feeling it with Star Wars Battlefront 2. So I understand the critique of like the loot boxes and stuff, but I didn't even get to that point because, and I kept trying to give it a shot, but it just didn't vibe with me. Yeah.
I was going to say, I love how even looking past all of that controversy.
Yeah.
And everything, looking past all of that
industry-wide outcry.
Yeah.
Yes. You've still gave it a chance and really put your heart into it. Do you feel like you were kind of like just holding on to that nostalgia?
Yes.
And just trying to like inject that into the
100%. I was like, okay, I'm not playing the characters I care about. What? Where's like me walking and exploring this world? Like I can't even go outside the base. Like this sucks. But yeah, it was just me holding on to that old, that nostalgia feeling for sure.
It's so funny. Like I completely sympathize because, you know, I think that Star Wars is such a near and dear franchise to my heart. And that, you know, like the, you know, Clone Wars, like they've done like so many great things, but I don't think there has been, I mean, Phantom Menace was a fun game, but there are many more strikeouts. Their batting average is awful.
Very awful. Like
for games. It's just terrible.
Yeah, it's terrible, but we did get a redemption story arc, not a story arc so much, but like Jedi Fallen Order came out. Have you played that one?
Yeah, yeah. So, I played it a little bit. Yeah. I didn't play it a lot.
So that one actually feels like a good Star Wars game. And I feel like that one did get some good, you know, reviews and stuff like that. And people really loved it. But you're right. The batting average is not so good. It's not so good.
So hot.
Can I say something embarrassing? Because this is a safe space, right?
Yeah.
I watch the cutscenes to Old Republic all the time on YouTube. Mm-hmm. Like weekly.
Like recently? Not, this is like a routine?
Yesterday I watched. Yeah. Oh my God.
Oh.
They have put together, somebody on YouTube put together like the cutscenes.
I love
for
when
it.
They do that.
Oh, and huh. It's like, it's honestly, it's better than any Star Wars movie since the original. It's the lightsaber battles are awesome. It's so exciting.
Are you
it's
serious?
So maybe, it's really
you
great.
You need to link gonna, that to us so we can watch.
I will. I'm going to send it to you. It's so fun. It's so fun.
I love that.
And I think maybe like for me, like we're all talking about like the nostalgia and stuff. I think one of the reasons maybe why I don't connect a lot with Star Wars games is because it's like the characters I love not done in a way I feel they're doing them justice versus something like Fallen Order or, you know, where it's like a new thing in that world, right? Could there be something to that?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that they are getting more success not trying to stick to the characters that we know from the movies and kind of diverting. I think it's like world building, you know, like it's like what the CW does with DC, you know, it's just like, let's see different perspectives and different characters.
Let's see different. Let's see different. Okay. So we started low.
So let's go high.
Let's go high.
Let's bring it up.
All right. So I'm sticking to this one. I did say this to, in an IGN like thing that we did, Think Piece or whatever. And I said, Portal 2 was my all time favorite game. Yes.
Okay.
Maybe not what you'd
love
expect,
that.
But and there are so many games. Like, I'm sure you get this a lot from people you're interviewing, but like, there's no way for a gamer to really pick just one. But if I were to say, like, the timing of that game when it came out was personally the right time for me. I love that game. I played it.
In what way was it the right time?
It felt like I had just kind of started my job at IGN. I was finally kind of finding my footing. I felt like I just had it all, you know, and it was like, this was the game I was going to play to completion.
I was on top of the world.
Yeah, kind of like that. Exactly. Yeah. And it was, you know, I'd loved the Half-Life games and then Portal 1, you know, the tiny little Portal 1 game. It's so cute now
just
when you think about it.
Into the orange box, just in the corner. Oh, yeah. Oh, by the way, here's Portal 2. You know, here it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then in Portal 2, you're helped by Stephen Merchant, who's
which
a little
is amazing.
The best.
And they open that world up in such a fun way.
Yeah.
And
it introduced a mechanic too. Like, I feel like we didn't really see that kind of thing. And then other games started doing it, like having your kind of Wheatley character, your GLaDOS character guiding you through. And I just love that Wheatley, just that big reveal at the end. No spoilers, but you know, he goes bad. And I think that's great. I think it's
really
great.
Yeah.
I kind of had a similar, you know, experience playing Portal 1 where I loved the world. I loved everything about it. I played the absolute shit out of the orange box.
Yeah.
Everything on it. TF2 and everything.
That was a masterpiece.
It was so good. What a good like just combination of games.
Team Fortress, yeah.
Right. But I felt like it was almost lonely in the sense that I wish that somebody had been with me. Mm-hmm. And I wish that I could have shared it with somebody. But then when they added the multiplayer in Portal 2, did you dive deep into that too?
Yeah, I did play quite a bit of that actually. And it was great. It was just an extension of what, you know, you did in the story campaign. And I agree with you in that it made it feel less lonely. And like now you're solving these things together. And it's that perfect like co-op game. Like I feel like it's hard to find games that, like Kyle and I are always like, what do we play? It's like Minecraft. Okay. But like, what else is there that's like, you know, you're solving puzzles or you're doing something different. So I think that Portal 2 did that really well.
Teamwork.
Yeah. Right. And again, like, you know, I think you really touched about something that a lot of people have said where kind of the best games have a world unto themselves that feel fleshed out.
Yes.
And Portal and Portal 2 especially like did such a great job of like you were saying earlier, like world building. Yeah. And expanding. And I can't imagine the trick of trying to such a beloved game. How can we expand on this without, you know, casting a wrong note is a really interesting thing. I mean, you must have at IGN played a lot of games that just missed the mark.
Totally. Yeah. This is like, I have to go through all the backlog of games, but the first one that came to mind was Alien Isolation.
Oh, see, that's a game I love. So I'm interested to hear.
Well, I didn't mind it. I just feel like, I don't know. I felt like there was some parts of the game that they could have gone deeper, or like they could have done more. And that's often my critique with games is like, oh, I wish they had done this, or I wish they had done that.
I mean, I agree with you. I think that they tied it into the Alien movies. You play Ripley's daughter,
yeah,
and you're on a space station, and it's a thing where you can't kill the alien. You just have to run from it, which makes it very scary. But yeah, I agree. It's like they didn't quite do enough. It's fun and scary, but then you're kind of like, all right, I'm on the thing. What do I do now? You know, I'm like, and there's I think, to your point, they just at the end just added more aliens to make it worse versus making the world, like in Portal 2, the Wheatley thing, like they...
out at the end. Sorry, I didn't spoiler warning that, but come on. It's been so many years.
It's old. It's been so many years. And also, that's not... I don't think you saying that ruins the game at all because the joy is in the play.
It is. Yeah, 100%. I feel like there is something to be said about that there are some games that it just... Like you said, missed the mark entirely and just could have done something just a tad different and it would have made it that much better. But Alien Anastasia, I feel like, kind of fits that. Yeah.
No, I agree. Yeah. And it did start off a little too slow. But still, I have not screamed that much in my apartment in a long time.
It does a good
time.
Job I mean, scaring you.
Oh, boy, is that a scary
thing. Yeah. Yeah.
No thanks.
No thanks.
Very quickly, because Alien Isolation to me was very scary, and I would play Super Mario Odyssey to calm down from that. Do you have a comfort food of games? Like, do you have like a...
Yes. Oh, I so do. City Skylines is actually my comfort food.
Oh.
Yeah, I love that one. I always go back to that when I'm just like, you know what? I don't know what the heck I'm going to play. So let's just play this. Because
that's a good,
I'm
like, palate cleanser.
For anything else. Yeah.
You know?
It's just like, and the music and the way that it gets you into that world. But yeah, you're right in that Mario Odyssey, like any of the Mario games or Luigi games are perfect for that. You know, they just really... Yeah. Anything Nintendo usually just kind of suits the soul.
Are you a City Skylines person, Sonia?
A little bit. I remember playing it, but I never really thought of it as a like regular palate cleansing game.
Yeah.
But I like that.
Yeah, it's just like always on my desktop, and I see it, and every time I look at it, I have fond memories, and I'm like, yeah, that's what I'm gonna play tonight because I don't want to play anything else.
It is the opposite of soothing for me because I'm terrible at any kind of SimCity urban planning type game. City Skylines, the only thing I've learned is no one would have sewage in the town that I built. Then I would do something and all the power would go out and it just starts flashing like the lightning bolt across the entire town. And I'm like,
so it's a little more stressful for you. So
too much responsibility.
So then when you need to palate cleanse from City Skylines,
what do you play?
Lock me up underground and give me a portal gun. That's what I said. That's where I'm at.
Full circle.
Naomi, Kyle, thank you so much for being here. And I'll let you know about the cosplay thing. Well, Sonia and I will work on it.
We'll get back
to you on the cosplay situation.
I'm down. If you guys want to do an ensemble or each do our own, just let's hope conventions open at some point in the future.
And you'll see us there.
Yeah. Otherwise, it's just the three of us on Zoom.
Yeah, that's hanging out.
All right. Thanks, Naomi.
Thanks, guys.
You know what? I think I could cosplay as Sully. I've been wanting to get into cosplay, and I think that is going to be my foray into the world of cosplay. See what I did there? See what I did there? See what I did?
I was going to say, I could see it as long as you don't say cosplay like that. I think you could pull it off is what I'm trying to say. Is that what you want to hear?
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
Okay, I can pull it off.
Yes.
There we go.
Okay.
Well, again, thank you to Naomi for coming by and chatting with us. I had a blast. She's fantastic. Make sure to check her out everywhere, Naomi Kyle, and especially on Twitch, twitch.tv/Naomi Kyle.
And stick around because after the break, we got another fan request. That's right. You asked and we're going to answer. We'll be right back.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places. Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
right, welcome back, everybody. Today's fan request comes from at RefaSliva1, who writes, "Hey guys, been catching up on the show, and I love it. Thank you very much. I wanted to know, what's your go-to game when you're having video game fatigue?" Video game fatigue, that's a great question.
I was actually experienced this recently where I don't know what to stream anymore. I feel kind of burnt out. There's nothing like super exciting going on right now. I started The Last of Us 2 off stream, which has been fun. But something that I love to go back to whenever I have any kind of burnout, I love Sayonara Wild Hearts. It's such an underappreciated game. It's really such a sleeper. Nobody jumped on this. It's like a super dreamy, like super aesthetic music rhythm kind of action adventure game. And it follows this this heartbroken young woman, and she's processing her heartbreak and finding herself, and they tell all the stories through tarot cards and the representations. But and also the whole soundtrack is this like electronic pop, super upbeat, and it's great. But I love it because it's so casual. It's so casual and it's so forgiving. Like if you die a whole bunch of times and you keep messing up in the same part, a little thing will pop up and say, "I will make your wish come true. Would you like to skip this bit? It'll bring you past the," and it like brings you past the area that you're stuck in, but it's so gentle about it. It's so gentle. So it's just, it's beautiful. And yeah, it's so, again, you can pick it up, play a couple levels. You can get as involved as you want. Or not. And yeah, I love that.
That is a great suggestion. I almost mentioned that when we were talking about music earlier, about being a musical game that I could put a lot of hours into. I think I might have played that all the way through in one sitting. It's really, really great. And I would actually expand. I would agree with you and also maybe say any of Annapurna's games. Annapurna Interactive, their games are fantastic. What Remains of Edith Finch, there's a ton of really, really great stuff they've done. And there is not a dud in the bunch. I mean, that is a company I think that every time I see that they're releasing a game, I'm like, I get giddy.
Yeah.
And they have these really interesting, casual, fun, just different games that are amazing. Sayonara Hearts is, that's a really good one. That's,
I think,
a,
it's really
good one.
And again, like I was saying, it's cool because you can get as involved as you want or not. You can just play all the levels and just mess around and whatever. But there's also like these zodiac riddles you can solve, and you can try and get gold if you want to get competitive on every level. And God, it's just,
It's so satisfying too. That game is so satisfying. But I will say though, one thing, when I was playing that game, I was like, who is this narrator? This is, I wouldn't let myself look it drove me nuts. And I was like,
the very end,
it's like Queen Latifah. And I
was like, I had the same reaction.
Right.
It's so great. Like, my ears just felt so soothed all the time. It's just such a, she has such a beautiful voice. And then, at the end, I'm like, yes.
That's great. Oh man. You know what? I would say, there's not a better one. I would maybe just add like pretty much any Annapurna Interactive game, I think, will bring you back into loving games. So
yeah, that's great.
That's right.
I mean, yeah. All right. Perfect. Well, thank you to RefaSliva1 for that request. And if you have any questions or if you want us to prescribe a video game for you, give us a shout at Good Game Nice Try on Twitter. Or hashtag GGNT. And that's it. That's all she wrote.
That's all we got. We got to practice our musical instruments. Jen, get on the drums. We got some music to write.
I'm on it.
I love it.
Coast is on it.
Coast is on it.
Maybe I'll be crust. Coast and I'll be crust. Hey, guys, out there, how about hit us at Good Game Nice Try with what do you think Sonia and I's band nickname should be? What about that? I want some good ones with Coast. It's got to live up.
Coast and Crust.
Maybe not Crust. We'll see.
We'll workshop that.
We'll workshop it. That's right. Good Game Nice Try is produced by Jed Samples and Nick Liao. Our executive producers are Joanna Solitaroff, Adam Sachs, and Jeff Ross. Engineering by Will Becton, with engineering and sound design by Anya Zizik. Music by John Danik.
This has been a Team Coco production.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at the coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.